Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage's completely online process lets you get a custom mortgage solution wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. From Gilmore Girls to Crazy Ex-Girlfriend to High Maintenance to Search Party, there's no shortage of shows to binge-watch over the Thanksgiving holiday weekend. So what to choose? We're sitting down with TV critics Margaret Lyons and Alan Sepinwall to sort through the options this hour. They'll give us their top picks for the most binge-worthy shows and talk about some of their favorite, less well-known options. This hour on Point, what to binge-watch over the holiday weekend. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you have queued up for the weekend for the long flight or ride home? And what makes a great binge-watch series? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. With us now from New York is Margaret Lyons, TV critic for the New York Times watching section. Margaret Lyons, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
It's my pleasure.
And from Newark, New Jersey, Alan Sepinwall is with us, TV critic for the news and culture website UpRocks, author of the book The Revolution Was Televised, and co-author of TV, the Book. Alan, welcome back to you as well. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Okay, I have to admit, historically, I am not a binge watcher over Thanksgiving weekend, but this Thanksgiving weekend, maybe, I don't know why, but maybe I'm in the mood. Do you guys have a sort of rule of thumb for what makes a great binge-watching series? Is there something more to it than any series you throw on to the screen? Margaret?
Sure. I think it's the compulsive feeling of when the end credits roll, you think, ooh, just one more. You know, and I think there's plenty of good shows that you can watch and sort of set aside in that way. It's sort of that feeling of like when you were a little kid and it was lights out, but you wanted to like use your flashlight and keep reading just one more chapter. So yeah. I think there are just certain shows that really capture that feeling.
I mean, Alan, the whole possibility of binge watching is kind of still a relatively new phenomenon, right? I mean, the way everything's organized now, you've got many people have access to so much all the time. You want to watch 10 episodes of something, just go do it. That didn't used to be an option.
I mean, you could do it with DVDs, but even there, like, you literally had to get up off the couch, change the discs, you know, or
go to the store.
That. VHS. Yeah, it was work. Now it's Netflix starts playing the next episode before the previous episode is literally even over yet. So they're trying to keep you situated as long as humanly possible.
And many, many people know just how to hold that remote in the hand, and it's got all kinds of capacity, and off we go. So here we are. It's Thanksgiving holiday weekend 2016. People may already be loading up their laptops for a train ride or a bus ride or a plane ride home. Is it a good season? Is it a good year for binge watching, Margaret?
Every year is a good year for binge watching because the whole premise, I think, as a super TV nerd, being able to have access to just this huge library with stuff like Netflix is just a complete different, you know, it's a different setup than even a couple years ago. So, you know, there's never a bad time to binge watch Frasier or Cheers. It's not particular to this winter, but those both are on Netflix and they're great. And if you've never seen them, you know, today's the day. So just I think like the library that's available also changes it more so than just, oh, it happened to be this year. There were great shows.
Let's get in there and look at what's available. Of course, Gilmore Girls, Gilmore Girls, A Year in the Life, a reunion miniseries. It's set 9 years after the end of Gilmore Girls. Here's just a little bit. Hits Netflix on Friday. Lots of Gilmore Girls fans really anticipating this. Here's a little bit from the trailer. Lorelai and Luke and Jess and Rory. The gang is back.
Everything in my life has something to do with coffee. I believe in a former life I was coffee.
Cannot believe the conversations I have in this room.
Loving you. I'm feeling very lost these days. I have no job. I have no credit. I have no underwear.
What?
Could have been a contender.
You're still a contender.
That Carole King soundtrack rolls, and we're right back there. Okay, thumbs up, thumbs down. Alan, what about the return of Gilmore Girls?
I feel kind of mixed about it, but ultimately happy I got to see it. Reunions are hard. The show was about a particular time in the lives of the main characters, and the relationship is just fundamentally different when Lorelai is 48 and Rory's 32 than when Lorelai was 32 and Rory was 16. Mm-hmm. But like, I like hearing the dialogue again. I like seeing the characters again, and there are enough moments that either made me laugh or made me choke up that, unlike a lot of these other recent reunions, I'm glad it's there, and I'm glad it gave me an excuse to start re-binging the original series with my daughter.
Margaret, the brassy single mom and her daughter, lots of quippy, quick repartee, all kinds of popular culture references. People who loved it really loved it. Will they love this, the return?
Yeah. I mean, I did. Like Alan, I had mixed feelings. There are some aspects of it that are frustrating. But I think to love Gilmore Girls is to love its flaws, right? And even in the original series, there were definitely elements that were frustrating or repetitive, or sort of like Rory's chronic fragility and Lorelai's sort of selfishness that the show kind of pretends is whimsy. You know, and you could see these character flaws or shortcomings or depth or texture, depending on how you're looking at it. And those are still present. There's a couple of sort of just the fact that it's in HD and it just looks different is, I think, maybe the most jarring update.
Too much information?
That's a little clinical in this way that Stars Hollow was always a little bit fuzzy. And just sort of dreamy, and it's a little bit less dreamy aesthetically. But as somebody who was obsessed with the show when it aired, it was such a treat to be able to just go back and have more good episodes and be part of it again, and to have those little like quirky moments be back. It felt like real Gilmore Girls, which is compared to a lot of other recent reunions.
And definitely back this weekend. I mean, Lorelai and Rory Gilmore, played by Lauren Graham and Alexis Liddell. Here's a scene from the show's second season, back in 2001. The two go back and forth about, talk about whimsy, about what to have for dinner.
So, what about dinner?
It should probably be something healthy since we've been eating junk the whole trip.
We had lettuce on our burgers last night.
We picked it off.
But it left its essence.
There's lettuce essence on our burgers?
Definitely.
And that satisfied our vegetable requirement?
For the week.
We can't argue with cold hard facts.
Satisfying the vegetable requirement for the week. Alan, is there something time specific about this? Is it still, like, apart from the HD delivery and whatever, is it still the premise still working in 2016?
I think it's like when I watch the old episodes, they don't feel particularly dated, even though the technology is different and the pop culture references are different. I think it's really more about the specific time in the characters' lives. So when I'm watching season one, season two with my kids, they're completely enraptured by all of it. And it doesn't feel like some artifact from the early 21st century. I do think there are times when you watch the new episodes where Stars Hollow starts to feel a little bit like Brigadoon, where it's this place that just sort of reappears in our culture every decade or so, unchanged. But
the little
I like
country
that about
Connecticut
it.
Town. What was the heart of it, Margaret? What was the heart of the appeal, which was so deep and wide for this series?
I think people are drawn to smart characters, and I think everyone on Gilmore Girls is smart in his or her way. Even sort of the weirdos like Kirk in town, like, he still is ambitious, at least. So I just am always curious about stories that are about people and how people have feelings and what those feelings lead you to. You know, no one's a vampire. No one's a police officer. Mm-hmm. There's just like a beating heart in every episode of the show, and that's rare. It was rare when it aired initially, and it's still rare.
So this starts Friday, and then how does it – is it all available immediately if you want to binge watch it? Do you have to wait until they run one at a time? How's it work?
All four episodes come out on Netflix on Friday.
Boom. Done. Binge. Gilmore Girls.
And they're 90 minutes each, so if you're planning a binge, budget broadly.
A chunk of time. Netflix is also coming out with The Crown. Original series focuses on the early life of Queen Elizabeth II. That is the one who lives in Buckingham Palace right now. Here's a little scene from that. King George, played by Jared Harris, is out duck hunting. This is back at the beginning of her royal career with his son-in-law, Philip, played by Matt Smith, and the Duke of Edinburgh. The king tells Philip that his duty as a husband to Elizabeth, who will be queen, is most important.
The titles, the dukedom, they're not the job.
Sir?
She is the job. She is the essence of your duty, loving her, protecting her. Of course, you'll miss your career, but doing this for her, doing this for me, would be no greater act of patriotism or love.
There will be no greater act of patriotism or love than standing by Queen Elizabeth. This is getting strong reviews. I mean, Margaret, you don't think of Queen Elizabeth as a charismatic figure exactly, and yet a lot of people are loving this. What's going on here with The Crown?
It's beautiful. You know, every sort of second of the show is shuddering with high production values and the costuming and the aesthetics of the show and the production, the sound design especially. You know, you can just sort of see dollar signs on everything and they're all high. I think one of the challenges is that it's not charismatic. And if you're looking for sort of like a jazzy, fun, funny, behind the scenes kind of thing, this is definitely not that. And especially within a group or a family where an image of sort of stability and staidness is prized, the show can get a little flat because there's no big anything. And so it's hard to find sometimes an exciting moment rather than just a lavish moment.
Alan, you quote from the new show, Winston Churchill, warning the young queen, saying, never let them see the real Elizabeth Windsor. Never let them see that carrying the crown is often a burden. Let them look at you, but let them see only the eternal. Will Downton Abbey fans find their new hot binging thing here, Alan, or something different?
I think that there's definitely going to be some overlap between Downton Abbey, which I did not like as much as I like The Crown, and this show. There's a lot about sort of carrying on tradition and having to sort of button down your feelings in the service of being a part of the aristocracy. So no, you know, Elizabeth is not one of the larger personalities of the family, but it's 10 episodes showing how she got that way and how she had to force piece by piece these little elements of herself down to become the queen. So I liked it a lot.
Is that the tension, the full Elizabeth Windsor flattening herself into the role or taking on the duty?
Yeah, it's a small tragedy in that obviously she gets to be the queen and live this fabulous lifestyle and all of that, but she has to stop being Elizabeth herself in order to do that. And most of the moments that I found strongest over the course of these 10 episodes are about her having to separate the one from the other.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about what to binge watch over the Thanksgiving holiday. Gilmore Girls, The Crown, and a whole lot more. Margaret Lyons is with us from the New York Times watching section. Alan Sepinwall is here, TV critic at the news and culture website UpRocks. You can join us this hour as well. What are you aiming, if you are, to binge watch this weekend? Are you deep in The Crown with young Queen Elizabeth? Are you all Gilmore Girled up? And what makes a great binge series for you? What have you gotten lost in? What do you think you might get lost in this weekend? Plenty of Crown love. It's already out there. And Alicia says to us, started The Crown to avoid election stress and was hooked immediately. Plenty of perfidy, but with lovely accents. Ian says The Crown, beautiful, especially and especially surprisingly fresh take on a well-worn story. Casey in Quincy, Massachusetts. Casey, thank you for calling. What's on your screen?
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Yeah.
I'm going to be binge-watching Gilmore Girls. It's been one of my favorite shows since I was a kid, and the whole revival has really kind of sparked up this passion again for me. I forgot how much I really love the show and how magical it is to kind of watch as I'm cuddled in my bed with a nice big cup of coffee and, you know, Lorelai Gilmore style. So it's going to be great. I'm really excited to see what the girls are up to now.
Are you worried about HD and a few more years on everybody, or no problem, bring them on?
Oh, I think Lauren Graham and Alexis Bledel is, they're both beautiful ladies, and I think, you know, like fine wine, they'll only get better with age. I did hear someone mention about, you know, the magicalness of Stars Hollow kind of being taken away because the quality is so great, and, you know, the staticky-ness kind of made it mystical, but I'm kind of interested to see what everything looks like in HD, so that way I can kind of get a better feel for what the cast kind of saw when they were on set, because it'd be more realistic to watch on television.
Casey, all ready for the Brigadoon of Stars Hollow and Gilmore Girls. Appreciate your call, Casey. Search Party is coming TBS. You got four self-absorbed 20-somethings trying to find a missing college acquaintance who suddenly goes missing. I've got a little clip here, Alan, Margaret. Dory, played by Elia Salkat, is telling three of her friends about a missing girl when the friends become distracted by other things. Search Party.
She's gone missing.
What do you mean, gone missing?
She's like a missing person. There's posters of her, like, all over the city.
Dory, what happened to her?
I mean, she's missing.
Well, where is she?
That's the question.
Why?
Portia, no one at the table knows.
Oh, my God, I feel like I'm about to cry.
I know, right? I mean, it's insane.
Dory, did I sleep with that waiter a few years ago?
I don't know.
Search Party, TBS, started yesterday. Margaret, what do we have here?
A really quirky, surprising mystery that's packaged as a single-camera comedy, but is sort of somewhere in between. So if you liked the book, Where'd You Go, Bernadette? I feel like that's sort of the closest analog to it. It's clever and strange and funny, and also just sort of this like real skewering of that really elaborate white hipness that you see in maybe pockets of Brooklyn and maybe pockets of the Pacific Northwest, and just sort of critical about that, but also tender about that. And this sort of ennui that happens when you're in your 20s and you're sort of a little bit lost, and it suddenly seems like nothing ever really happens and you're trapped. And then suddenly there's this catastrophic incident, and Dory, our heroine, sort of has an awakening.
Skewering white hipness. Alan Sepinwall, is this Portlandia by another name?
No, Portlandia is much more overtly comic than this. Mm-hmm. Like Margaret said, it exists in this nether region where it's kind of comedy, but it's much more mystery and much more of a character study, specifically of the Elia Shawkat character and looking for direction in her life. There's over the episodes I've seen, there's not nearly as many overt laughs as there would be when you watched some Portlandia.
And then we get, off this, we've got new things. We've got things that aren't brand new, but you guys are recommending Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Margaret, you and many others really sing the praises of this. It came out in 2015. Recommend it to us.
It's one of the funniest, smartest shows that has aired in a long, long time, and certainly the most distinctive in itself and confident in this way that is very, very rare, especially for new shows.
And a musical, Rachel, these days.
It's a musical, but I think sometimes that turns people off who think that they don't like musicals. I think even if you are typically not a fan of Broadway musicals, you might still really get a lot out of this like dark, twisted humor of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I only bring up the music part last when I'm trying to recommend it to people, because I sometimes see the sort of eyebrow raise and the slight sort of pushing away from the table. It's funny and strange and serious in a lot of sort of interesting, complicated ways. And it's a show that takes its comic stuff very, very seriously, as well as its sort of it has its cartoonishness, but it's anchored by these strong, important ideas.
And still, a musical. Here's a little bit. Rebecca Bunch, played by Rachel Bloom, getting ready for a date with Greg, played by Santino Fontana. She secretly hopes she runs into Josh Chan, played by Vincent Rodriguez III, whom she actually wants to date. Here's the song she sings while getting ready for that date.
Whoa. Hey, Josh, I want to look good for you tonight, so I'm going to get in touch with my feminine side. It's the sexy getting ready song. The sexy getting ready song. Ribbing and plucking, brushing and rubbing, the sexy getting ready song.
The sexy getting ready song. I have seen that, and it's hilarious, Alan. Did it grab you?
It did. I love this show. It took me a little while to sort of get attuned to its rhythms. The title's off-putting. Rebecca's behavior is sort of deliberately off-putting. But I think Rachel Bloom and Aline Brosh McKenna, the two showrunners, really figured out exactly what the tone was and how to have a sense of it. And Bloom is just so versatile, dramatically, comedically, musically. One week she can be Beyonce. The next week she can be Marilyn Monroe, and she just nails it. It's one of my favorite things on TV right now.
Margaret, does it hit the bar of being, you've got to have one more episode every time?
Yes. Yep, absolutely. I actually recently binge-watched it, a couple of episodes of the recent season with some friends, one of whom is a huge fan, two of whom had not seen the show before. So I can tell you from actual testing that it works.
And what's the thing? It's not a mystery. So it's not. What's the thing that pulls you forward? You've got to know. What's the elixir that says, come on, next show, one more?
I think that it's funny and engaging, and at every moment of the show, something is happening that's well done, and that always is fun to watch. And there's also, there's an ongoing romance, maybe, and there's sort of the rom-com situation somewhat between Rebecca and Josh. Mm-hmm. But it's also just like it's a fun club to be in. You like spending time in the world that the show creates, and you want to keep that going as long as possible.
Get into a fun club and binge watch maybe this weekend. We've got a lot of callers for you too. Margaret Lyons and Alan Sepinwall from all around the country. Rob in Madison, Ohio. Rob, what's on your binge watch recommendation list?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I recommend Atlanta on FX, which you can get on your on-demand mode.
This is created starring Danny Glover, I think. Tell us about it, Rob.
This show is so mind-blowingly funny, and it might not appeal to everybody, but it is just the best thing I've seen in years. It really is.
This is two cousins. What, they're in the Atlanta rap scene? What's the story, Rob?
Yes. It's the this young man comes back from school from Princeton, and he's kind of out of sorts. And he sees that his cousin has a hit on YouTube, but he has no producer or anything, and he really thinks he could make this his success and his cousin's success. And the pitfalls surrounding all of this are just so phenomenally current and funny. And another thing another show I would like to recommend is The Durrells of Corfu, which is on PBS that you could watch on their website.
It's about a British family who's sort of a kind of run away to a Greek island.
Yes, it is. It is kind of a Under the Tuscan Sun, but mm-hmm. takes place in the 1930s, and a whole cast of nutty family members and animals, and it's just exciting and colorful and beautiful.
That one on PBS. You have diverse tastes, Rob. A man of parts there. These pretty good span here. Alan, Atlanta, have you watched it?
Atlanta, I would agree with him. It's one of the best shows on TV right now, and if you can go through it, you're going to get a treat, especially because every episode feels different from the one before. So even if you're watching them all in a row, you're not going to get that kind of sameness you sometimes will get if you're binging a half hour, because it's just you don't know. Like one episode, Donald Glover will be front and center. The next, he won't even be in it at all, and suddenly it's a parody of, you know, a talk show. It can be almost anything, and it's terrific.
The Atlanta rap scene, coming back home for that. Margaret, how about Atlanta and put it up against the Durrells of Corfu, quite a far-flung opposite setting?
Those are different shows. Yeah, Atlanta, I can't recommend highly enough. I think it's beautiful and smart and terrific. Durrells of Corfu, there's a lot going for it, especially if you like your sort of
period
typical
drama.
PBS. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're just like PBS and British stuff, like this is definitely a twinkling example of both of those based on a true story. There's also other iterations of it. This is not the first time there's a show based on this story. So there's, if you fall in love with the show, there's books and other shows that are telling the same story about the same family.
Let's get Corey in Nashville on with us. Hi, Corey. You're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I was calling because I just delightfully finished Stranger Things on Netflix,
mm-hmm.
and I loved it. It reminded me of my youth when I was a middle schooler in the 80s and captured the Goonies and E.T. and Aliens all at the same time.
Except in Indiana this time, right? I mean, science fiction, horror kind of a theme. What's the story in it, Corey?
It's about these four middle school boys that love Dungeons and Dragons that kind of get caught up in this mystery where their friend disappears and there's a scientific lab located in the backwoods of Indiana and trying to figure out what happened to their friend, and a mysterious young girl of their age shows up with telepathic powers and
psychokinetic,
and they
even
go on this adventure. It's awesome.
Stranger Things, Netflix original there. Margaret, what do you say?
It's a lot of fun. I would say if you're watching it in a family situation, it is not great for all ages. If there are any scaredy cats in your family, this is definitely scary.
Is it straight up bloody? That kind of horror?
No,
or just
but,
scary?
But, more scary. It's mm-hmm. not gruesome body horror, but there are like, you know, monsters and things that go bump in the night, and certainly like children in peril, and a lot of crying mom stuff from Winona Ryder, who's terrific on the show. So it is really good, but I would say maybe not for all ages.
Stranger Things, thumbs up from Corey in Nashville for that. I tell you, I don't binge watch often, but I happened to recently, on one exhausted afternoon, pick up High Maintenance from HBO. It's a funny story. It's a pot delivery guy. He's got his own business. He sells and delivers pot around New York. He's just known as The Guy, played by Ben Sinclair. Makes deliveries all over the city to all kinds of clients. It just sort of leaps from one setting to another depending who he's selling to. Here's a little bit from High Maintenance. The guy has just finished selling to clients who are a husband and wife.
I actually have a colleague who wanted your number. Can I just give it to her, or do you
need it? Yeah, sure. Just text me her name, number, and address, and then when she texts me, just make sure she doesn't say anything about weed. Make sure she just says she wants to hang out.
Got it. Cool.
Okay? That is the cutest baby I've ever seen.
Oh, thanks so much.
You are so beautiful.
Congratulations. And the new house. Can I take any of these empty boxes down or anything?
Well, actually, would you mind taking that trash? I can smell Jane's diaper.
Babe, you don't need to do that.
Oh, I don't even mind.
He's helpful.
I'm very helpful.
Okay, thank you. Bike safe.
Yeah, thank you. I'll take the recyclables, too.
Sweet. Thanks, man.
Bye-bye, you guys.
I cannot believe you seriously just asked the weed guy to take out the trash.
Okay, from High Maintenance, Margaret Lyons, I don't know if our clip fully can capture just how kind of dreamy, weird, all over the place, and wonderful, I found this anyway, kind of anthropological study of New York now through a guy on his bicycle with his backpack and his weed delivery.
It's so beautiful. It's like the sweetest, smartest, most interesting show, especially because it's an anthology. And so, like Alan was saying about Atlanta, that every episode is different.
Mm-hmm.
Every episode of High Maintenance is really different. This season included an episode told from the perspective of a dog, which was just like charming and poignant. I also super recommend starting with the web series, which is available on HBO Go if you're an HBO subscriber. The web series, so in the clip that we just heard, one of those characters actually appeared in the very first episode of the web series, too. So there are all these like interesting Easter eggs and surprising little connections between characters that you notice if you watch the entire series. And you still get a lot out of any given episode, but like any other anthology, the more you see, the more there's connections.
This is such a zen pot delivery guy. What's the picture? And every piece, like a very different, jewel on the necklace, and yet little threads, if you pay close attention, that tie them together. What's the picture of contemporary urban New York that emerges from High Maintenance? Or can you even get your descriptive mind around it, Margaret?
I think there's one that's very sad and that, you know, it's hard. Life is hard and everyone is looking for a way to make it just a little bit easier. And some people do that with drugs and some people do that with parties and some people do that with food or by staying in your apartment all the time or by never being in your apartment, and that everyone is kind of fighting their own little battle and it's hard. But the show sort of holds up everybody and treats them with like tenderness and dignity and sort of sees the little like spark within everybody that says like, I deserve to have happiness and love in my life, even if the way I behave doesn't always make it seem like that.
Under the compassionate eye of the pot deliveryman, James in Charlotte, Vermont. James, thanks very much for calling. You're on the air. Charlotte.
Hey, thanks so much, Tom. Pleasure to be on the show. Just wanted to speak to how addicting these television shows can be, where I have convinced my fiancé now on multiple occasions to start rewatching a series with me, only for her to go to bed and for me to stay hours watching episode after episode.
Careful, James. Careful. Keep that relationship here now. Take care of that first.
No. I tell you, well, your screener was asking me about Westworld. I've been a very good puppy about that one, and I have not tried to go ahead of her. Mainly because you can't binge watch episode after episode. You got to wait till Sunday night.
Yeah. Westworld, lots of fans for that. What else has been on your keep me up past the bells of midnight, James?
Oh my goodness. Most notably, probably The Wire, the new Battlestar Galactica. Well, the new, you know, that came out a number of years ago now, but the more current iteration of it. Game of Thrones, started that one late and just couldn't stop. Just so many fantastic programs out there.
James, be careful, enjoy, but don't lose that gal. She's your fiance after all. It's funny. Alan, what about the social upside and downside of binge watching here? You'll be in with somebody or you may lose them.
Yeah, and you can sort of wind up at different speeds from the people in your life. You know, I had watched The Americans linearly as every episode aired on FX. My wife didn't, and then recently, before the most recent season, she started binging it on Amazon, and so she would keep roping me in with questions, and she's asking me about things that I saw 2.5 years ago, and it becomes harder to have that common conversation. But it's so great to be able to recommend these things to people and for them to be able to dive in. So, you know, someone mentioned The Wire a minute ago. You know, Amazon has the whole HBO library there. So if you've never seen The Wire, you've never seen The Sopranos or Sex and the City or Curb Your Enthusiasm or Deadwood, you can just fire them all up over this weekend and see some of the absolute best shows ever made. It's great.
Margaret, is there an ideal number for a binge-watching posse?
Number of people?
Yeah.
Oh, I fly solo.
Oh, all right.
No one wants to watch as much as I do. I think it's a little easier to sort of man your own mission.
Support for On Point with Tom Ashbrook and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings home financing into the 21st century with a completely online process that's fast, easy, and convenient. Using a phone or tablet, you can safely share bank statements and pay stubs without having to dig through piles of paperwork. It takes just a few minutes to get a custom mortgage solution on your terms, wherever and whenever you want. Check out Rocket Mortgage at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about what to binge watch over the Thanksgiving holiday, if that's your pleasure. Margaret Lyons is with us from Watching, the New York Times section. Alan Sepinwall from Up Rocks, the news and culture website. And we're really interested in what's on your queued up list. What's your state of binge bliss if you go blissful down that road? Does every show work for binging? And if not, why not? What are you catching up on, if that's where you're headed this weekend? Online here on Twitter, Cassie says, high maintenance. She adores it. Greg loves Black Mirror, looking at where technology takes us over time, sci-fi there. Washo got a throwback urge here. Can't talk about binge watching without mentioning West Wing. Feels like an artifact of another time now. Donald loves Fleabag. Margaret, I think you like Fleabag too. Maybe as well, Alan. What's Fleabag, Margaret?
Fleabag is about, it's a sort of fourth wall breaking comedy, but there's also a dark sort of tragic edge to it about a woman who is, I guess, in her early 30s and her best friend has died and she's sort of trying to put the pieces together. But we uncover a lot more about her over the course of the six episodes. It's really distinctive and not like anything else I'd seen, I don't think, ever.
We've got a little clip from it here. Fleabag is played by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. She's talking to the camera, breaking that fourth wall, about how good she looks on this day. She's trying to cope with life in London after coming to terms with her tragedy, the loss of a friend. Talking to the camera about how good she looks when she sees a man walking toward her, who she believes is checking her out.
I took half an hour trying to look nice, and I ended up looking amazing. Just one of those days. Gorgeous, fresh face, new top, little bit sexy, on my way to open my cafe and... Oh, God. Yeah, you check me out, Chub-Chub, because it's never going to happen. Oh, God, he can't believe how attractive I am. Kind of worried I'm going to make a sex offender out of the poor guy. Here we go. This better be good. Here we go.
Walk of shame.
Kind of worried I'm going to make a sex offender out of the poor guy. And then he just says walk of shame as though she's headed home a mess. What's the character here, Margaret? So chipper and yet dealing with tragedy.
She's not that chipper. I think that there's okay. That
working
thing
hard
that I think
for
a lot
right
of people. What?
Working hard for it right there in that scene,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, I think it's that thing that a lot of us do is when you're coping with something really hard that you get sort of effusive or bubbly or in denial and, you know, sort of keep tap dancing. And that's sort of one of the themes of the show. It's interesting. It's very easy to watch all at once. I will say that for sure. I watched all six episodes and was completely obsessed and actually just started it again. I watched it twice back to back. I thought it was so terrific.
Amazon Prime's Fleabag. Alan, what do you say? Fourth wall breaker here.
I loved it, and I'm really sort of tired of a lot of the different things that it does, but it does them so well. There's a lot of other shows where, you know, I'm sick of Kevin Spacey talking to the camera and telling us how awesome he is on House of Cards, but the way that Phoebe Waller-Bridge does it, she created the character, she wrote the show, just the way she talks, she's so involving, and there's a scene, I think, in either the third or the fourth episode where Fleabag and her sister go to a retreat out in the country that has, I think, the best scene of television this year where she runs into a bank loan officer she had seen earlier in the season. Like Margaret said, you can race through 3 hours of this really quickly over the weekend, and it's delightful.
Fleabag. Not everything good is new, of course. I mean, we've got listeners looking back to a West Wing and more here, Wire, The Wire. FX drama The Americans as Philip and Elizabeth Jennings, Russian spies posing as Americans. You mentioned it, Alan Sepinwall, played by Matthew Reese and Kerry Russell. Here's a little scene from The Americans where they've just found out that their teenage daughter, Paige, donated all of her savings to a Christian charity without telling them about it. Philip and Elizabeth, both big atheists, are infuriated with Paige, played by Holly Taylor. They're confronting her, Paige's disrespect, I guess. Her father in The Americans rips up her Bible.
I didn't lie.
Well, you certainly don't seem to know the difference.
Do you?
Why?
Stop! What are you doing? Stop it!
This book tells you to do that!
Philip.
Does it? You respect Jesus, but not us!
Russian spies in the Americans. Alan, take us back to maybe look forward this weekend.
This is one of the best shows on television. It's extraordinary in that you just played my favorite scene. It's not light stuff. So if you're looking for something a little happier over the weekend, maybe you want to watch Parks and Rec or something like that. But it's extraordinary. The plot is great. And like a lot of those classic cable dramas, it's a spy show that's really about family, and so it's using the fact that the parents are KGB spies in deep cover in the 80s in America to add a lot of weight to things. So ordinarily on a lot of other shows, if the daughter suddenly takes an interest in church, it's maybe a little bit tense. But when your parents represent the Soviet Union, then you get that reaction from it, and it's extraordinary.
Boom. In The Americans. We can go lighter. We've got the animated Netflix series BoJack Horseman. Again, not brand new, but I think, Margaret, you're recommending this one, about a washed-up former sitcom horse. This is animated, remember. A talking sitcom horse, animated, BoJack, and his life 20 years after his show was canceled. And here's a scene from season one where BoJack, voiced by Will Arnett, goes on Charlie Rose.
In 1987, the situation comedy Horsin' Around premiered on ABC and went on to air for 9 seasons. The star of Horsin' Around, BoJack Horseman.
I parked in a handicapped spot. I hope that's okay.
You parked in
I'm sorry, disabled spot. Is that the proper nomenclature?
Maybe you should move the car.
No, I don't think I should drive right now. I'm incredibly drunk.
Okay, Margaret, a cartoon about a talking horse who was a star 20 years ago and you're in.
Yes. I will say that while it is much lighter than The Americans, don't go looking for very light shows with BoJack because it's not that light. There's actually a very sort of seedy underbelly, and it's a show that takes really seriously ideas about mental health, about addiction crises. There are very sad character deaths. It's not a breezy show, but it is an intense one and one that definitely rewards close watching. So if you've seen it already, you know, you can watch it 2 or 3 times and still pick up on a ton of new gags that are in the background, or sort of they show like a CNN style TV show, and the ticker across the bottom has, you know, like surprisingly moving jokes within it, too. It's maybe the most densely packed comedy around.
And intense because it's densely packed, or because BoJack, well past his talking horse stardom, is a lost soul? Or where's the...
I think it's a show that is fundamentally about depression and alienation, which does not sound like a laugh riot, but it is a show that has made me laugh many times and continues to do so. And its third season came out this summer and was terrific. So the sort of first half of the first season feels a little bit like almost a parody of Californication or something. Mm-hmm. But then it kicks into gear and it sort of reveals this much deeper, more profound set of ideas about how hard would you have to push everyone away until you were really left alone, you know? And then what do you do with that? Now you're alone and you got what you wanted, but you're alone.
Congratulations. Okay, yeah. More to it than I knew. I respect to BoJack Horseman. I have to pay more attention to that. Scott in West Orange, New Jersey. Thanks for calling, Scott. You're on the air with Margaret and Alan.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have mentioned so many shows that I haven't watched that I plan to, like Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. I'll just give a shout out to Jane the Virgin, the only network show I watch regularly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to binge watching Atlanta and Insecure. Atlanta is on FX, and I just don't get time to watch it during its regular airtime. And I just came across Insecure on HBO by accident. Saw 2 episodes, would really like to binge watch it, and want to know if you're guests know if it's going to be on Netflix. And I just want to ask if they happen to know if there's going to be any more episodes of Psych. I know it went off the air. I'm hoping it'll come back. I have family in New Orleans. I have in-laws in South Korea. I have friends all over the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut who really love Psych and would love to see that show come back.
Remind us, Scott, what Psych was about. I missed it. Psych.
Psych is a show about these two guys who are not really detectives. They do get hired by the Santa Barbara Police Department as psychic consultants to help work on major cases. And it's a very funny dramedy, if you will. But it's such a good show. There's no profanity. There's no sex or anything like that in it. That my wife and I actually watch it with our 7-year-old, and he loves the show. So it's just a very funny show. It's a very engaging show, and you can really watch it, and I enjoy it. And I'll just add this about about Atlanta. You had a previous guest call in.
Yes.
And the reason the show is different every week is because, and I've only seen two episodes, I just don't get time to watch it, is that they actually focus on a different character for the entire episode, in each episode. And I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, so you can go a very different direction every time out in Atlanta. Scott, you're a great watcher, Scott, and a good talker too. Watch out, Margaret Lyons. what about Insecure? Describe it to us, Scott.
It's a show about an African American woman. She's a professional. I've only seen two episodes, maybe one and a half actually. But the characters were as in Atlanta. The characters are very well drawn. They're full people. And what I liked about Insecure was, and perhaps your guest can tell us more about it. What I liked about it is that instead of confrontation, because there's a bit of a racial tinge to the show, because she's African American, she's working for this organization and she believes she was hired because she was black. But instead of confrontation, it's more about what she's thinking as opposed to yelling at someone and confronting someone, because that's the way we mostly live. People will say something to me, and rather than just reacting verbally or getting upset, we actually imagine an answer, I think, what we might have said, but that isn't what happened.
And maybe voice it in the car later driving somewhere. Maybe. I don't know. A friend of mine might have done that.
Hey,
Scott, thank you very much for calling. I really appreciate that. Insecure, I realize I have seen a little bit of that and liked it a lot. Tell us something about Insecure, Margaret.
It's terrific, especially if you're looking for a sort of character-driven study about. It stars Issa Rae, who created and starred in the web series The Adventures of Awkward Black Girl, and it's similar to
lots of online dating going on here.
Right. So that's one of the ways that it's different from Misadventures of Awkward Black Girl. In Insecure, she has a long-term boyfriend who is, you know, kind of a dud. She thinks. I feel like Insecure is almost a misnomer. It's not that she's insecure. It's that she's a little bit confused or stressed out or bored with her own life. I think the show is a really fun depiction of how you rely on your female friends. There are some very steamy episodes, some very silly moments, but fundamentally it's like one of the most textured. The dialogue on the show is textured and interesting, and it doesn't sound like any other show, which is impressive considering how many shows there are.
Scott asks if it's going to be on Netflix. Do we know?
It won't be on Netflix because it's an HBO show, and HBO shows don't land on Netflix. Yeah. So if you have HBO, I'm assuming that it's all on HBO Go or the sort of web version of that. Presumably, it would eventually be on Amazon like other HBO shows. But Netflix is not in its future.
And Alan, what about Psych? Scott has friends and family watching all over the world, New Orleans and Seoul, South Korea and beyond. Did it make your screen, Alan?
That was a show where I kind of liked the idea of it, and I liked a lot of elements of it, but I never really liked the main character enough to stick with it. And I'm sorry to say that as of now, there seem to be no plans for a revival of it. But given that now everything is being revived at some point or other, you can never say never that someone might try to do a reunion movie or a miniseries like the Gilmore Girls thing.
We've got Terriers. Now, this is another this is way back from 2010. Not everything good is new, but you've got, ex-cop Hank Dolworth, played by Donal Logue, former criminal Brat Pollock, played by Michael Raymond James. They're running an unlicensed private investigation business. Let's listen. Here they've just stolen a dog.
Remind me again, how much are we getting paid for this?
It's my dry cleaner's dog. She said anything we bring in the next 2 weeks, no charge. Come on, what else are we going to do today? Cure cancer?
Baby.
Hey, that's my dog.
Time to go.
What do you think you're doing? Go. Get over.
Come on. Go.
Hey! Winston! Come back! I'm gonna get you guys!
That was fun, right?
Your dry cleaner's dog, what do you own that could possibly need dry cleaning?
Okay, Terriers from 2010, from your way back machine, or not so far, Alan. This makes your list. What puts it back on your Thanksgiving binge list?
It's a perfect binge. There's 13 episodes, which if you were watching it at the time and you were hoping for more, it's disappointing that you don't get more. But it's 13 episodes. It tells a story over those 13. It has an ending. And so you can watch the whole thing over the weekend and be done with it and get a complete and perfect entertainment experience. Just the chemistry between Donal Logue and Michael Raymond James, as you got a little evidence of in that clip, is extraordinary. There are some standalone cases, but mostly it's a big mystery about what some rich and powerful people are trying to do to Ocean Beach. It's one of my favorite shows ever, and you can go through the whole thing in a day.
Terriers, do not miss it. Lee in Atlanta, Georgia. Lee, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My wife and I really have been enjoying
Good Girls Revolt, Amazon Prime. It, against the backdrop of Roger Ailes and Fox News and some of the other things going on now with the ceiling that women in journalism encountered, this takes you back to the 60s. Mm-hmm. It's got a great character arc with the female characters who really do interesting work bringing out the nuances of what women experienced.
This is young women at Newsweek back in the day trying to sort of fight their way into significant roles. Not easy.
Correct. Absolutely. And you know, my wife liked it less than I did, but we both liked it a lot.
Good Girls Revolt, Amazon original, and it got a lot of favorable reviews. Leah, I appreciate that. One more here. Marina, Medford, Massachusetts. Marina, you're on. Our time is short.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
So I'd like to recommend something that is not binge-watching at all for those of us who are very short on time. Pixar just released an animated short called Piper. It's 6 minutes long, and you can watch it on iTunes.
Okay.
And it is just one of the most phenomenally cute and touching and beautiful pieces of film I've watched in a long time.
It's animated if it's Pixar. What's it about?
It is about a little sandpiper, actually, just as the title implies. And it's kind of a coming-of-age story. They do a really beautiful job of integrating music into the animation, and I really can't say enough about it. It's wonderful.
Got it. Piper on Pixar, and it's 6 minutes long. So if all the cooking and all the cleaning up and all the football and all the walks and all the family conversations keep you from the binge-watching path, check out Piper on iTunes. Oh, wow. Margaret, Alan, you guys do this for a living. Do you binge watch over Thanksgiving weekend, or do you, I don't know, go for a long walk in the woods?
I binge watch.
Right back in the saddle. Alan, fess up.
Absolutely.
All right. All those, tryptophan from the turkey will have us prone before we know it, and we will come to the sofa better informed for this hour, and really looking forward to a little laid back binge watching after the football, maybe playing it too, not just watching it. Let's get up and move after the meal. Margaret Lyons with Watching at the New York Times. Wonderful to have you here. Thank you so much for being with us today, Margaret.
It was my pleasure.
And Alan Sepinwall, TV critic at the news and culture website UpRocks. Alan, thanks for joining us again. Happy Thanksgiving to both of you.
Anytime.
Thanks very much. Listeners, have a great holiday when it gets here. You know what to watch. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.